Do you remember rushing home after school so you didn't miss your favourite TV show? Well, now, if children have access to a digital device, they can watch anything, anytime. And platforms like YouTube are now the go-to place for kids viewing. But should we be concerned about what children are watching and how they're watching it? There's some dark content out there, but is YouTube too hard to police? And how have you managed your children's access to YouTube? Tell us on our Facebook page. Dr. Jessica Balanzategi is a researcher in children and digital technologies, and Dr. Joanne Orlando is a family digital literacy expert and educator. Jessica, Joanne, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
You're in the same network. Joanne, how are children using YouTube these days?
When young children are online, that's their platform of choice. When I talk to parents in my interviews with my research and when I talk to children, it's YouTube that's the go-to place for most things that they do online. And often children are watching it for 1 to 2 hours every day. And this is in the age group before they start school. So in that 1 through to 5 age group. And often they'll sit there and they'll watch video after video, whatever is kind of pushed up into their viewing screen, and often we'll just watch a series of videos at one time.
So what's wrong with the TV programs that are available online on streaming services and things like ABC Kids in Australia? Why are people shifted to YouTube?
Lots of reasons. It's mostly about convenience. One is that the child can watch whatever, you know, what they want any time that they want. So there's that part. Plus, they can watch it on their own device. So often they'll be on an iPad or they might be on mum or dad's phone, and they can do that anywhere they go. It's interesting. I was talking to one family a few weeks ago, and for the first time, the child watched ABC on a TV, ABC Kids on a TV. And the child was so frustrated because they were seeing ads and, changes to the program that they weren't seeing when they're online. And the young girl was getting very frustrated because she had to put up with this and she only had 1 hour and it was interrupting her 1 hour. So it's kind of the expectation that for children that when they want to watch a show, that's all they want to watch and they don't want any interruptions in it.
Jessica, YouTube has just been fined $170 million for breaching Federal Trade Commission privacy and advertising laws relating to children. What happened there?
Yes, well, it's a historic fine from the Federal Trade Commission. It's actually for a violation of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, a US kind of law that dictates that children can't have their kind of internet habits and their viewing tracked without parental consent. So basically, it's, I guess, the culmination of long simmering controversies surrounding children's content on YouTube, because YouTube has for a long time relied on this grey area. So its official position is that YouTube is only for users over 13, but over the last few years, children's content and what they kind of call family entertainment channels have become one of their most lucrative kind of genres, and obviously kids, one of their most, their hugest demographics. So I guess what the FTC have argued here is that while the YouTube platform have been able to circumvent these regulations by saying that the platform is not designed for users under 13, they have at the same time been gaining this huge commercial advantage by harnessing this younger market.
They've been sprung pitching to corporations, haven't they? We've got this huge kids market.
Yeah, so they've been part of the FTC's report has this evidence that YouTube have been in presentations to big kind of children's toy companies like Mattel and Hasbro, have been pitching themselves as the new Saturday morning cartoons and the new kids' TV. So they're obviously very aware that children are a huge audience for the platform.
And now they have YouTube Kids. How does that fit with their other content offerings?
Yes, well, YouTube Kids was launched in 2015 at around the time that YouTube were realizing that these family entertainment channels were one of their most popular kind of genres on the YouTube platform. So at the time that YouTube Kids was launched, it wasn't necessarily framed as providing a safer place for children. It was more framed as YouTube is clearly very popular with children. So this was kind of before these controversies that have sprung up in the last couple of years, where writers like James Bridle and a whole bunch of different media commentators have realized that there's a huge body of disturbing, seemingly child-oriented content on YouTube. So this was kind of before all that, so YouTube could, I guess, get away with kind of inhabiting this grey area between YouTube is not designed for children, but at the same time, kids' content is extremely popular on YouTube. So YouTube Kids is obviously explicitly oriented at children, and as a result, it has kind of parental controls, it has curated content, and it doesn't deliver personalised ads in the same way as the standard YouTube platform.
We'll talk a little bit more about James Bridle and how he took one for the team and watched a lot of stuff so that we didn't have to navigate what is actually out there. But Joanna Orlando, for parents and grandparents of small children, YouTube is a really different experience to TV, isn't it? It's often views on a small screen. What kind of impact is that having on families?
Yeah, that's right. And it is a massive change, not just on a small screen, but anytime and anywhere. So on the downside, you know, parents might use that as a way of keeping their children occupied. You know, they're on YouTube, the child is totally engaged in the content, because as we're saying, there's a lot of content produced just for them. So in some ways, parents use this to manage children's behaviour in a way, because they're tucked away, they're on YouTube, and they can stay that way for a long time without making any noise in a way. But also there's a change in what parents are actually knowing that the children are engaging with. You know, in the olden days when kids watch TV, a parent really just had to walk into the lounge room and, you know, glance at the TV and know that what the child is looking at is okay. Or if they put them onto a channel like ABC, you knew the content had been, was, you know, safe for children to watch. But it's not the same now when they're watching YouTube, because you can't see the screen. You actually, as a parent or grandparent, have to walk right over to the screen to see what the child's engaged with. And it's a difficult and different kind of situation, checking on the content. Plus, with YouTube, you know, the clips only go for a certain amount of time. It's not a 30-minute show like we're used to on TV. So they constantly change. So that constant changing of the content as well is very hard for parents to keep track of. And also, because a child is on there by themselves, the parents are often not really aware of the kind of content that's being fed up to the child as well. So there's kind of, for parents, it can be unsafe. They get really worried about it, and it's also quite removed from kind of the daily life that they're in. So it can be quite tricky for parents to be able to regulate, to know about, and to know what to do about it as well.
And Joanne, tell us also what's going on in a child's nervous system when it comes to time to switch the screen off. They seem like their emotions get very heightened at that point.
That's right. Well, one of the reasons for that is that parents often don't know when the show is finished, you know, so they might call them off mid-video. And for anyone who's been in that situation, you know, it can be incredibly frustrating, particularly if it's happening every time that you go online. But because the content is so personalised to the child, they're getting exactly what they love. It's a bit different than TV. You don't necessarily get exactly what you love. So you get very attached to your content. So when you're being taken off it, you don't necessarily want to let it go. And children can get really frustrated, and you can get a lot of pushback from them because of that.
It's interesting how you were talking about the impacts on the family experience and the child experience of growing up before. I understand there's an impact on children's language development. How severe can that be?
Yeah, it can be. So if a child is on their device for, you know, say a couple of hours every day, at that time, and because it's quite an individual, independent viewing of that content, you're not necessarily watching it with mum or with someone. It's a, you know, it's a you and the screen often kind of experience. So that time that a child is on is often a silent time. So if it's a 2 or 3 year old, that time they're losing the opportunity to experiment with their language, to make comments, to have a chat with mum, to ask questions. And if it's happening every time, for example, a child hops in the car, you give them an iPad, they go on YouTube, they're watching the videos, then they're losing kind of all those really important, very casual, but really important moments for learning your language. So we need to be really careful in terms of how often, you know, we give our child a screen so that they're well behaved, because they are missing out on those kinds of opportunities in terms of their language development and other development like their social skills.
Can they get addicted? Is that a formal thing that can happen to them?
It's not a formal medically diagnosable condition. A lot of us use the term, you know, I'm addicted to the screen, I'm addicted to the internet. But a child can develop really unhealthy behaviours if the way that their technology use is encouraged is unbalanced. For example, if you are always using the screen, you know, you could have extra hour on the, you know, watching YouTube, or you can have an extra hour on your iPad if you're a good girl when we go to the shops. So if you're using technology as a reward and continually using it as a reward for good behavior or whatever kind of behavior you're trying to get, a child will develop really unhealthy attitudes towards technology and screen, and they'll want to use it all the time. So we really need to be careful how we position it as parents, that we're really setting up balanced, healthy approaches to it.
Speaking of balanced and healthy, let's look at some particular types of content. Unboxing Joanne Orlando. We're speaking with Dr. Joanne Orlando, a family digital literacy expert and educator and senior lecturer in early childhood education at Western Sydney University, and Dr. Jessica Balanzategi, researcher in children and digital technologies and a lecturer in cinema and screen studies at Swinburne University. And we'd love to hear from you too. How have you managed your children's access to YouTube in particular? Tell us on our Facebook page. Joanne Orlando, unboxing videos, I understand, are incredibly popular with children. Why is this?
They're amazing unboxing videos. So what they are is it's a video of, normally it's a, it can be a child, it can be an adult, but they have, it's like a present kind of idea, and you watch them unwrap the present, unbox the toy out of the, you know, its packaging and play with it. So that's why they're called unboxing videos. And they are watched by children around the world, young children around the world by the millions. They're one of the most popular genres for young children to watch. And it's interesting, as an adult, you watch it and you think, what is this? You know, it's nothing like I've ever seen before. But for children, it's a really important experience. You know, it's a well-connected experience. What it is for them is that they are, you know, where they're reliving times when they've got a present, when they've got a new toy. So they're reliving their birthday or reliving a special occasion, and they can really relate to it. And they kind of, their joy is in watching the other child or the other person on the screen unbox their product. They kind of relive it themselves, and it's a really exciting experience for them. And you'll often find that children watch these same videos over and over and over again. And as adults, we think, you know, what is it? But they also love the idea that they know exactly what's in that box. You know, when they turn that video on, they know exactly what's in it. So it's kind of a sense of power and control for a three-year-old. Oh, I know what's in there. I know exactly what toy he's going to play with then. And they are so popular online, these videos. It's incredible.
And Jessica, we talked before about how YouTubers are really reaching out to major toy companies and saying, look, we've got this content, we can really work with you here. Mm. Tell us about how that works with the phenomenon of the kidfluencer.
Yes, well, kidfluencers, I guess they go along with the very popular unboxing genre that Joanne was talking about, these new kind of child celebrity personalities on YouTube that talk to their viewers about the latest toy or kind of some new video game, and or just generally kind of talk about their day-to-day lives on YouTube. So in many ways, the kidfluencer relates to what Joanne was talking about, that children the kind of things that they get out of YouTube and that they enjoy about YouTube is that sense of empowerment and kind of being able to engage with child creators and child personalities as kind of a central figures in the entertainment that they're watching, which is a great thing. But it also, I guess, there are concerns that the very genre of unboxing and the very phenomenon of the kidfluencer is this new terrain when it comes to advertising for children. And we in Australia and many other places around the globe, we have quite firm regulation around the kind of advertising that children can see during when watching broadcast TV and film. But YouTube is an entirely different landscape. It's not, doesn't abide by the same kind of regulations. So, and this is partly what this FTC fine is about, that by denying that people under 13 use YouTube, YouTube has been able to get away with this targeted advertising for children on this content that's clearly aimed at children. And also some of these genres maybe they are targeted advertising in and of themselves. So on YouTube Kids, targeted advertising isn't allowed in the same way. But when genres like unboxing and kidfluencers are central to this type of content, we've got to ask, I guess, you know, where are the boundaries between entertainment and advertising on YouTube?
Yeah, you get the impression YouTube is just saying, oh, it's all user-generated content. How did that get here? Heavens above.
Yeah, they've long benefited from that position that the platform is a tool that just kind of is the mediator between the user who's watching the content and the user who's uploading the content, I suppose.
Mm. And we talked briefly before about James Bridal, and he has discovered this incredible breadth of really weird stuff on YouTube. Tell us a little bit about what some kids have been exposed to there.
Yes, well, James Bridal wrote a really popular article that went viral in late 2017 about, I think it was called Something is Wrong on the Internet, and it was about all of the very strange genres on YouTube that seem to be directed towards child viewers, but according to our existing cultural definitions and policy and regulatory frameworks are entirely inappropriate for children.
So, we're not talking illegal or sexual in content necessarily, are we? But just really weird.
Well, I guess YouTube, the main platform, has always, part of what the viewers are attracted to about YouTube is that it disrupts our existing generic categories that are kind of have been firmly entrenched by traditional media industries. So it also, in doing that, it disrupts the boundaries between what is content for children and what is content for adults. And there's actually like a whole umbrella genre really on YouTube that is either playfully or with kind of murkier or more troubling intents, aiming, like presenting itself as child content on a surface level, but is much more disturbing thematically or visually than we would expect of child content. So that has long been a very popular type of YouTube content. But I guess what James Bridal's article kind of was getting into was that there's clearly a huge body of content on YouTube that is targeting child viewers, because child viewers are a very lucrative market for YouTube. As Joanne was talking about, children watch a lot of YouTube on a daily basis, and they tend to watch it by engaging with autoplay cues and things like that. So this content was kind of harnessing that demographic, but at the same time, it was very cheaply produced, quite inappropriate. Perhaps content producers were getting a kick out of the fact that parents weren't noticing how disturbing the content that their children were watching was. So lots of genres that were very troubling, like romantic videos featuring Spider-Man and Elsa, for instance. So the whole controversy became known as Elsagate because of that, Elsa from Frozen, the Disney film.
I do want to leave some time to talk about solutions in a moment, but Joanne Orlando, just quickly to you, how do things that disrupt those boundaries and those categories affect a young child with where they're at developmentally?
Oh, yeah. Well, those videos are incredible. I'll just give you one example of one video that I watched in my own research, which was 50 Shades of Peppa Pig. So it probably gives you a little bit of a sense. Nothing explicit, but, you know, there were adult themes there. So that's the issue. So we know when children are engaging with adult themes that they're not ready for, that they get confused by it. It can be a bit frightening for them. So there's that. Children love also watching these videos because they're seeing their popular characters that they love, like Peppa Pig and Elsa, doing things that are naughty or doing things that are odd. And, you know, young children find that quite amusing. You know, they're at that stage, you know, if you're holding a plate upside down, you know, that's not right. You know, your plate should be the other way around. So they love things that are quite odd. So these really tapped into their sense of humour. But it's around, you know, also the idea of what's under this. They're learning so much about what's acceptable social behaviour, what's acceptable quality relationships with each people. And they learn a lot from these videos. While they're not educational videos, they're entertainment. Children still learn from entertainment. So they were introducing quite adult themes too, you know, way too early for young children. And because parents weren't aware that their children were watching these things, there was no opportunity for parents to be able to talk about what they saw. You know, do you know why someone would upload a video like that? You know, it's not really a young kid's video, is it?
So Joanne, is it then an all or nothing proposition? Do we need to ban YouTube for small children? Or do you have some practical tips for parents who might have a bit of a digital literacy gap for navigating that space with their small children?
Yeah, there's a few ways. So children can watch YouTube, but as a parent, you need to be very aware of the kinds of videos they're watching. Or instead of watching YouTube, where anyone can upload, there's lots of kind of apps that children can use which are closed, which have a series of videos from different content producers, but they're closed, so there's no opportunity for anyone to upload a video onto there. So if you are worried, just choosing one of those apps, like ABC Kids apps, is, you know, a safe option for that.
I like your tips too about drawing up a playlist with the kids as a nod towards collaboration. It's been a fascinating exercise having a brief look into this space with you both today. Thank you for joining us on Life Matters.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Joanne Orlando, a family digital literacy expert out of Western Sydney University, and Dr. Jessica Balanzategi, researcher in children and digital technologies and lecturer in cinema and screen studies at Swinburne Universities.